For West Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Iraqi forces have met with stiff resistance in the first step of their offensive to retake the Islamic State stronghold of Mosul. VOA's Sharon Bain reports exclusively from the front line, where some 4,000 Iraqi troops, backed by Sunnis and supported by the Kurdish Peshmerga, fought to seize a number of villages southeast of the city.
The Iraqi offensive started at dawn. Coalition airstrikes pounded one of the villages, but Peshmerga General Najat Ali said Islamic State were fighting back hard.
They advanced, but when they reached those villages, ISIS attacked them by the suicide bomber, by the mortar, by the machine guns, by those weapons.
They know that for Iraq, the fight for these villages is pivotal. And all of these soldiers know the final battle for Mosul will be a long one. Sharon Bain, VOA News, the Mahmoud Frontline.
French police have arrested a man that they say was in the advanced stages of a plot to attack the country. French Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve said there was no tangible evidence linking the plot to either the attacks in Paris last year or Brussels, where 31 were killed on Tuesday. Alleged Boko Haram leader Aboubakar Shekau has signaled his possible retirement in a new video that appeared online. Nigerian security agencies have never determined that the man in the video is truly the head of the Boko Haram, who are blamed for some 20,000 deaths since beginning its insurgency in northern Nigeria in the year 2009. This is VOA News. United States and Russia are calling for the drafting of a new Syrian constitution by August. After a four-hour meeting in Moscow, Secretary of State John Kerry and Russian President Vladimir Putin agreed that cooperation between the U.S. and Russia has been instrumental in achieving an unexpectedly successful cessation of hostilities in Syria.
And because of the cooperation, both political and military, which we have been able to achieve with some effort, this Sunday will mark 1 month of the cessation.
Secretary Kerry also said he's aware of violations of the ceasefire, but they are being carefully monitored. U.S. has accused seven Iranians of carrying out a massive computer hacking scheme on behalf of the Iranian government to disrupt the internet operations of 46 American financial institutions. Attorney General Loretta Lynch said the hackers at two Iran-based computer companies work for Tehran, including the Revolutionary Guard Corps. She said the seven experienced hackers coordinated a cyber attack campaign from late 2011 to mid-2013.
These attacks were relentless, they were systematic, and they were widespread. They threatened our economic well-being and our ability to compete fairly in the global marketplace, both of which are directly linked to our national security. And we believe that they were conducted with the sole purpose of undermining the targeted companies and damaging the online operation of America's free markets.
Despite Lynch's high-profile announcement of the case in Washington, it's unclear if any actual prosecutions will take place. None of the seven has been apprehended, and there is no indication that Tehran would ever turn them over to U.S. authorities. Washington has no extradition treaty with Iran. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has hailed the conviction of former Bosnian Serb leader Radovan Karadzic as historic. He said the judgment shows that fugitives cannot evade justice, according to the law. The court found that the 70-year-old Karadzic, guilty of Serb atrocities throughout Bosnia's 1992-95 war that left 100,000 people dead. President Obama says the United States was slow to speak out on the atrocities committed during Argentina's former dictatorship, but says his administration will confront the past with honesty and transparency. Mr. Obama visited a memorial park to the victims of the so-called Dirty War on the 40th anniversary of the coup that installed a brutal military regime. President Obama is in Argentina as a guest of the new president, Mauricio Macri, who is intent on strengthening the ties between the U.S. and his country.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, March 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's defense minister denies politicizing the military.
As an individual Nigerian and as a citizen of the country, I have the right to my choice. However, my choice should not interfere with the professional function of the armed forces of Nigeria, and that is what will separate the both of them.
Brownie Samuka is Liberia's defense minister. Cameroonians debate whether their 84-year-old president should seek another term in office. South Sudan warring parties are told the international community's patience is running out. And Zambia defends salary increment for President Edgar Lungu.
This salary increment started from the Kaunda days. Every year there was a salary increment for the president, for all civil servants, and that is what has been happening from time immemorial.
Chishimba Kambwile is Zambia's Minister of Information. Botswana leads the world in HIV diagnosis and treatment. And European Union leaders meet to discuss security measures following Brussels terror attacks. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Defense Minister Brownie Samuka has denied politicizing the military. He said the military is a professional entity that is mandated to uphold the Constitution. The defense minister has been accused of supporting the candidacy of Vice President Joseph Boakai, who happens to come from the same Lofa County region of Liberia. But Defense Minister Samukai says he, as a citizen, has a right to support whomever he wants to support politically, and that his decision should not interfere with the professional function of the armed forces of Liberia.
The Constitution provides that each and every Liberian citizen has a right to individual vote and choice. As an individual Liberian and as a citizen of the country, I have the right to my choice. And if my choice is going to be the vice president, yes, it is my choice to vote for him as I please, as I do, as I want. However, my choice should not interfere with the professional function of the armed forces in Liberia, and that is what will separate the both of them.
What do you say to those who say because of that they don't trust the Liberian military or the security, including the military, to be impartial during the coming election?
The military is not a political organization. The Minister of Defense is a politician. The Minister of Defense is appointed as a politician as required by the Constitution, that the president makes an appointment. And if individual he appoints as the head of the Minister of Defense is a civilian to which I am. However, the military is a professional organization, having the rules and regulations under the Uniform Code of Military Justice as applied. So the military does not bring his political thinking or his political actions in issuing orders. The military are trained to carry on lawful orders. They are under the authority of the Chief of Staff. They do not act upon politicians what politicians want. They do not act in a partisan way to undertake actions under the Constitution of Liberia, which clearly defines what is the function of the military. So there is no politician, including myself, who can try and attempt to politicize the actions of the armed forces of Liberia. So if you're looking at the Minister of Defense, the Minister of Defense is not a military personnel. He is a civilian who is appointed by the politician. He is a politician appointed by the president to serve as the overseer of the armed forces of Liberia. So the military does not follow the political wind of political parties. They carry on actions and orders as prescribed by the commander-in-chief.
Mr. Samuka, you were appointed by the president, and then there are other people who were also appointed by the president who, according to an act of the Liberian legislature, who it says that if they have a political ambition, should resign their post. Does that affect you, or does that affect the vice president also?
Oh, yes. It affects any and all Liberians who honor the administration of the government. The code of conduct is very clear. If you have a political ambition, the code of conduct prescribes exactly what action you should take within what time frame you should conduct. I, as a Minister of Defense, do not have any political ambition. Therefore, I'm not affected by that provision of that act that has been passed into law. I serve at the will and pleasure of the President as a politician appointed as the Minister of Defense. The Chief of Staff of the Armed Forces of Liberia is the professional head of the Armed Forces of Liberia. He executes lawful orders as prescribed under the Constitution and the statutes as prescribed under our laws. So there is no way, absolutely no way, if anyone in the opposition or anyone in any administration can tell the military to do illegal things.
Brownie Samuka is Liberia's defense minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. In Cameroon, supporters of President Paul Biya are calling on him to move up elections and run again, while opponents say his 34 years in power have been more than enough. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports on the debate from Yaoundé, where pro- and anti-Biya marchers held demonstrations on Thursday.
Supporters sing that Paul Biya is their leader and their father, and that at 84 years old, the man is still solid enough to be president for as long as he wants. Similar messages echoed at events across the country Thursday as the ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, CPDM, celebrates its 31st anniversary. CPDM Central Committee member Chalmain Misanga Nyamding says they now want Biya to change the constitution and organize early elections.
C'est que les Camerounais aiment Paul Biya, ce qu'ils ont fait, ils l'aiment, ils ont cru à cet homme-là.
He says Cameroonians have always loved and will continue to love Biya. He says Cameroonians continue to believe in him because he has shown it through his courage, determination and experience that he is the best person to develop Cameroon and protect it from crisis and security threats. But across town Thursday, opposition parties organized protests.
Cameroon is a great and beautiful country. It is our only...
Lawmaker Patricia Ndamjoya of the CDU party says Cameroon should concentrate on more pressing matters like development, reforming the electoral code, and defeating Boko Haram, which has been attacking security forces and civilians in the north since last year.
C'est très curieux. On se demande pourquoi est-ce que avec l'insécurité ambiante, les problèmes que les Camerounais connaissent.
She says it is very curious that with increasing security threats from Boko Haram terrorists and rebels from the Central African Republic, Biya would be so focused on ensuring he can be president for life. She says that is a total injustice. The next presidential poll is scheduled for 2018. Njoya said the opposition needs to unite behind a single candidate, something they have never been able to do before. Ruling Party Central Committee member Benoît Ndong-Soumet says he is not worried.
Vous savez, le problème avec nos contenteurs, c'est qu'ils sont toujours bons pour dire ce qu'on n'a pas pu faire.
He says people who say they do not see what Paul Biya is doing are blind and ungrateful. Biya revised the constitution in 2008 to remove presidential term limits. He is the oldest African president after Zimbabwe's Robert Mugabe. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Zambians are debating whether President Edgar Lungu and civil servants should get their annual salary increment this year. A Presidential Emoluments Act signed this month by Finance Minister Alexander Chikwanda put President Lungu's 2016 annual salary at nearly $40,000 plus an annual allowance of $11,000. An editorial in the Zambia Post newspaper said it was shocking that the president and other political leaders would have their salaries increased in the wake of Zambia's current financial and economic difficulties. But Information Minister Chishemba Kambwile says the salary increment is an annual thing that began with the administration of founding President Kenneth Kaunda.
It is a standing order in Zambia that every year when all the unions negotiate for a salary increment, the same percentage that is given to all the civil servants is given to everybody, including constitution office holders. Constitution office holders meaning the office of the president, the vice president, the speaker, the members of parliament, the attorney general, and everybody in government, the president inclusive. So it is not right that the president had asked for his salary to be increased, but it is a standing order that every time that salaries are increased for the civil servants, all the constitution office orders are also salaries are adjusted.
Mr. Minister, the question that I think many Zambians are asking is that while that may be true that the president did not ask and he's getting the same increment that every government person is getting, Given the financial and economic difficulties of the country, do you think he could have set an example to say, no, we are not going to do that now?
You see, the civil servants will not accept their salaries not to be increased. That would be political suicide for anybody. You know, African politics are not like advanced countries or developed countries per se. In Africa, everything becomes an issue. If you don't increase salaries for civil servants because of the economical situation, that will backfire very badly. So if you don't increase their annual salaries, then you are in problems because there will be industrial unrest. So to avoid that, government increased the salaries minimal. It was a minimal salary increment.
Zambia elections are coming up later this year. Is this good politics for the president, for the people to say that he's giving an increment in salary? Or you think good politics would a dictator to say, no, I don't want it for now?
You see, in Zambia, my brother, everything is an issue. If the president says, I don't want the salary increment now, they'll still say it is because of the election. And if you look at the salaries that constitutional office bearers, particularly politicians, get in Zambia, it's nothing to talk about.
In the local Zambian papers, they are saying the founding president, Kenneth Kaunda, would never have done this. He would never have accepted this.
It's not true. This salary increment started from the Kaunda days. Every year, there was a salary increment for the president, for all civil servants, and that is what has been happening from time immemorial.
Chishimba Kambwile is Zambia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 25th. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. In South Sudan, the head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, and former Botswana President Festus Mohai told the country's warring parties on Thursday that his patience and that of the international community is wearing out. Wake Simon Wudu reports from the capital, Juba.
JMEC, which is tasked with the monitoring full implementation of the peace deal, brought together top representatives of the government led by Information Minister Michael Makuei, the SFLMIO, representatives of the Troika countries, and other diplomats representing the international community. Mogai says time is running out. Due to the poor quality of this audio, we are voicing over Mogai comments.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me be frank and tell you that the patience of the international community, as is my own, is being tested. While I remain optimistic, as must we all, now is the time to prove that the commitments that have been repeatedly made by the parties are genuine and sincere. The country cannot afford any more delays. I implore you to heed this message.
Mogai expressed the concerns about continued violations of the permanent ceasefire by both government and opposition forces. He also raised the concerns on the deteriorating economic situation in the country, saying urgent steps must be taken by the government to address the crisis. Mogai says the transitional government of national unity must be formed, but says that will not alone solve South Sudan's problems.
Formation of a new government will not in itself be a panacea. The term of the transitional government, which should have begun months ago, is rapidly elapsing. Therefore, once more, I urge the parties to be dedicated in every respect to the task of forming the new government and consider what will be the plan of action for the first months in office.
Former rebel leader and first vice president designate Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir signed the peace deal last August after increasing pressure from the international community. But so far, the two parties have made little progress in implementing the deal. Despite talk of a breakthrough on containment areas, Makuei says little progress has been made on that issue as well.
Up to this moment, the parties are not in agreement in terms of the presence of the SPLM-AIO in Equatoria and Bahr al-Ghazal, and as such, it has directed CITESAM and the JMCC to verify the presence or the absence of the SPLM-AIO in those areas.
Disagreements over the presence of Machar's forces in the two regions so far have remained one of the key challenges derailing implementation of the agreement. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon.
The tiny southern African nation of Botswana is leading the way in treatment and containment of the virus that causes AIDS. It is exceeding goals for addressing the HIV crisis well ahead of a deadline set by the United Nations. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Botswana, with HIV infection rates of up to 25% of the adult population, has moved ahead of other countries, both Western nations and the economically disadvantaged, in tackling the AIDS epidemic. The United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS has called on countries to strive to ensure that 90% of their citizens know their HIV status and that 90% are treated with antiretroviral therapy to achieve 90% viral expression. A new report published in The Lancet HIV has found that Botswana is exceeding those goals well ahead of a 2020 deadline. Botswana has reached a viral suppression rate of 96% among its infected citizens, mostly between the ages of 15 and 49, according to Max Essex, chairman of Harvard University's T.H. Chan School of Public Health AIDS Initiative. The reason, Essex says, the middle-income country has been open to letting in international AIDS researchers and clinicians to assist in the fight.
So you can't say it can't be done, even in sub-Saharan Africa, where people have very high rates of infection and where there's not a large pre-existing number of physician AIDS specialists and that sort of thing.
Countries in the West, according to Essex, are lagging behind Botswana in the fight to suppress the virus that causes AIDS, reaching anywhere from 60% of their HIV-infected citizens in Europe to just 30% in the United States. In the absence of a cure for AIDS, Essex says the UN estimates that suppression of the virus through identification and treatment could result in a dramatic drop in HIV transmission rates.
In the way that the World Health Organization set up those goals, they stated that if all countries or the world could reach those guidelines by 2020, then within 10 years of that, rates of new infections should go down by 90% in the world.
Botswana's experience seems to show the validity of that approach, and Essex says he's optimistic that other countries will eventually catch up to it. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
European Union Justice and Interior Ministers have voted to deepen joint intelligence gathering and swiftly push through measures to share airline passenger information and step up their fight against terrorism. They met Thursday in an emergency meeting 2 days after the Brussels bombings that killed more than 30 people and injured more than 260 others. VOA's Heather Murdoch has more from the Belgian capital.
EU member states have been debating tightening border controls since the Paris attacks. In much of the 28-member EU, travelers pass freely between borders without identification. Other cooperative security measures, like sharing passenger information from flight manifests, are expected to be discussed during the EU's emergency meeting in Brussels. Belgium is the EU's de facto capital, being home to many of its institutions. Some analysts say increased insecurity, the refugee crisis, and the rise of right-wing nationalist movements in many countries now threaten the very strength of the Union. Three European Commission workers were among those wounded following Tuesday's blasts.
These are testing times. These are times for us to stand together. These are times for compassion. These are times to stand against hatred, extremism, those who have disrupted lives of so many.
Some Belgians say underlying issues that cause young men and women to join extremist groups need to be addressed. Locals say descendants of immigrants, especially Muslims, often feel left out of mainstream society.
Avec cette jeunesse, ce serait d'abord de ne pas les ghettoiser.
We need to stop marginalizing them. When people are stuck in ghettos, it creates a lot of problems. They feel they are always rejected and sidelined. They're easy prey for terrorist recruiters.
Donc, voilà.
Per capita, more people from Belgium have joined Islamic State fighters than any other country in Europe. Last week, one of the Paris attackers was arrested in Brussels, where last year's deadly assault on the French capital was planned. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Brussels.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on football. Liberia pipped hosts Djibouti 1-0 in a 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier in Djibouti City on Thursday. Madagascar and Central African Republic drew 1-1. Comoro Islands pipped Botswana 1-0 and Ghana beat Mozambique 3-1. Staying with the Nations Cup qualifiers, Swaziland host Zimbabwe in Lobambo today, Friday. Egypt play Nigeria. Mauritania face Gambia as Guinea engage Malawi. African champions Ivory Coast play Sudan. Tunisia test Togo. Mali engage Equatorial Guinea and Algeria encounter Ethiopia. Tomorrow Saturday, Mauritius host Rwanda, Seychelles play Lesotho, Namibia face Burundi, Cameroon meet South Africa as Cape Verde Islands test Morocco, Senegal engage Niger, the Democratic Republic of Congo welcome Angola and Burkina Faso engage Uganda. On Sunday, Mozambique host Ghana, Kenya welcome Guinea-Bissau, Benin host South Sudan, Botswana face Comoro Islands as Zambia challenge the Republic of Congo. Meanwhile, Zambia's 1-1 draw with the Republic of Congo at home in Ndola on Wednesday has not dampened their spirits. Newly elected Football Association of Zambia President Andrew Kamanga assures my colleague James Batty that Zambia will come away with a positive result in the return leg in Brazzaville on Sunday.
Well, I think we've spoken to the players and they're psychologically ready to go and face Congo. And we expect a positive result. We should be leaving in the next 5 hours. But they gave us assurance that all is well and they're psychologically prepared for the game.
You drew with Congo in Zambia?
Yes, we drew 1-1 yesterday.
So what are your chances now? What do you need to do?
We still have 3 games to play. Congo are topping the group on a goal difference. They've got 5 points, just like ourselves. And then I think Guinea has got 4 points and Kenya has got 1 point. So it's a round-robin group. And whoever tops the group is the one to go and represent the group at the next AFCON in 2017.
That was Andrew Kamanga, the newly elected Football Association of Zambia president, speaking in Ndola, Zambia. In women's football, Ethiopia host Algeria in the return leg of their 2016 Africa Women's Cup of Nations qualifier in Addis Ababa tomorrow, Saturday. In FIFA Women's Under-17 World Cup qualifiers, South Africa face Nigeria, Egypt test Cameroon, and Ghana play Morocco. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Republic of Congo President Denis Sassou Nguesso has been declared the winner of Sunday's presidential election, which the opposition says was marred by massive fraud. And alleged Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shakur has signaled his possible retirement in a new video that appeared online on Thursday. The 8-minute video posted to YouTube shows a subdued Shakur sitting and quietly praising Islamic fighters. At the end, he says, "For me, this is the end," without elaborating. And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Kwame Ofori, and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, I'm James Butte in Washington, saying have a nice weekend.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the Sunny Side of Sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details and enjoy the show.
Next on Let's Talk. Social media. Are you a participant? Do you have an online account? Has it affected your life? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing social media. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.